So this week we get a little break from Mark's Gospel. This is the year of Mark, but today we've launched into John. And it's a bit of a challenge for some preachers because for the next 4 weeks you're going to have chapter 6 of John's Gospel. And it's known as the Bread of Life Discourse. So it's broken up into small sections. And why I say it may be a challenge for some preachers is that the theme is constant all the way through the Bread of Life Discourse. And it can be a challenge to get a new angle each time we go on to the next part of the Gospel. And today we have the very beginning of that Gospel, of that discourse. And so clearly there is a Eucharistic theme there. By the time John put his Gospel together, the custom of the church had been established. And so the language that is used and the symbolism that is used reflects very strongly the practice of the early church. And it is the same practice and the same language that we use at the Eucharist here on this altar. So I don't want to go on too much about the Eucharistic theme today because I want to kind of set something each week and hope that by the end of this 4 weeks we're a little bit more enlightened, not just about the sixth chapter of John's Gospel, but about the Eucharist itself. Now, right at the beginning of this, what I do is I look to see who's present, who says what, and what do they do. Now, for yourselves, you've heard this reading so many times, you'll be saying, oh, here we go again, it's the loaves and the fish. Don't disregard it because you've heard it so many times. Please don't do that. It is the only miracle that is recorded in all four Gospels. It was significant to the early church, and it is equally as significant and relevant today. The only miracle that is recorded in all four Gospels. And of course, each Gospel writer puts a different slant on it to emphasise what it is that he's trying to drive home to his audience. So what is trying to be driven home to us at the beginning of this discourse? Who's there? What do they say? And what do they do? Well, clearly Jesus is present. And he moves away. He goes to the Sea of Galilee or Tiberias, as John tells us, and then, which is the same place, of course. And that's on the western side of the Jordan River up the northern end. And then he goes up a hill. Any time a hill's mentioned, you can equate it to Moses going up the mountain. And I've said this over the last 2 weeks. Everything in the New Testament has its seeds planted in the Old. So now we have Jesus moving away from the edge of the water and going up the hill. And he sits down with his disciples. And then he sees this huge crowd there. Just recently we heard, and he felt sorry for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So Jesus takes with him his disciples and he observes. And then he picks out Philip. And it's the only time Philip really gets a mention in this miracle. He picks out Philip and says, where can we buy some food to feed all these people? So Jesus sees the people and he sees that now they will be getting hungry. And of course there's the Eucharistic theme in the background of all of that. We're all hungry for God. I don't want to labour that today. I want to labour what Jesus is doing with those that are present. Because that's how we get involved in this Gospel today. What is Jesus doing with us? What is Jesus saying with us? And what are we doing? That's the starting point. The Eucharist behind that, we know that, and we'll come into that later on. But at the moment, we have followed him, and he observes they're hungry. Do we observe that they're hungry? Do we observe the needs of the people around us and even beyond us? Most of us go to the place where Philip went to. And that place, when we're given a challenge, is it's too hard, or we've tried this before and it didn't work, or this is just impossible. Because when we look at the situation that we're in our life, very often the reality is so overwhelming that we can't see beyond it. Jesus can. Jesus is the face of God. And so these people aren't aware of it, but God is among them. He is about to feed them. And in doing so, he is creating an opportunity for Philip Today, you are all Philip's or Philippa's. Today, we have been called in to look around us and see what we can do. Do not get discouraged by the reality that we live in, that I know that if I give $5 to somebody, that it's not going to change the world. $5 to a poor person, it's not going to change the world. It'll change the world for that one person. It may not change the whole world, but for that one person, it will change the world. It will change the world for them if we stop and talk to them, the nameless, homeless people around us. It does. It may not have that big impact immediately. That's the reality. But the reality is also what we're in the here and now. So don't give up just because it seems overwhelming. Miracles do happen. They truly do. And they may just happen in your life and in your time and in your space if you're open to that possibility. And it was Andrew that came forward and said, well, look, there is this young guy, he's got some loaves and some fish here. And then from that, Jesus feeds, God feeds. It's not just Jesus, this is God. Jesus is the face of God among us and among those people. I mean, certainly they were luckier in one sense than what we are. We have to figure it out. But once again, I say, don't be overwhelmed by the task that's ahead of us. Be encouraged. There is an opportunity there. Each of us are carrying something in our basket of life that could change another person's life. That is within us. Sometimes we just can't see it. And then they do feed the 5,000. So Jesus observing, and then he speaks, and then they act. So what I would ask us also to think about at this particular time, at the beginning of this gospel, is our actions. And this is where it joins with young people and the elderly, even if they're grandparents or not. So where it comes in, where the rubber hits the road, as they say. Now, as a young person, a very young person, we choose to behave in certain ways. We start to ascertain or to work out what are good and bad things in our life, where our values, to use adult language, where our values are. We don't get those instantaneously in our DNA when we're first slapped on the backside after we're born and the tears come out. It is something that is learned within us. And we get them from those who are older and experienced. They don't have to be elderly, but they're from people who have, in a sense, been there, done that. They have a wisdom. And that's the beauty of getting old, normally. And with grandparents as well, there is a wisdom there that is imparted. Because if they don't impart, the elderly and the mature don't impart to the very young, their actions will shape who they become. And so we must intervene in the lives of people, doing it appropriately, of course, to help shape young people into people who live and exercise proper values. Without that guidance done in love, without that guidance, we have young people growing up who will behave badly because they don't know the difference between the good and the bad values in life. And those of us who are older, we have a responsibility, like Philip and Andrew, to hear what is going on, to observe what is going on, and to get in there and do something positive about it in the right way. That's the marriage, if you like, of the very young and the elderly. Because otherwise, the very young grow and they're just awash with a whole lot of confusion. They think everything is okay as long as I'm okay. They do not learn to observe what's happening in the world. And they do not learn how to respond to what's happening in the world. because their world is simply themselves. But as we get older, most of us learn that I'm actually not the centre of my world. And the things that I say and do, and the things that I don't say at the right time, and the things that I don't do at the right time, have a big impact. So don't be overwhelmed as we get older. Be energised if we can, if we're allowed to, if our body allows us to help impart that wisdom from our experience. That is what Jesus is doing at the beginning of this miracle. He is creating an opportunity for his disciples to learn and to pass on, to give. And that's only part of the Eucharist. The rest will come in the weeks ahead. But just remember, as I say again, and I say this to myself as I reflect back on my own life, the things that we do when we're little, they shape us and they make us the person that we become. If you want your young people to become selfish and introspective, then do nothing. If you want young people, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, little people, if you want them to grow to be good people, people of powerful values, then appropriately intervene and help them. Resource them with the faith and the values that you have. That is what is in your basket. And that is equally as mighty as five loaves and two fish.